Hi, Alicia. Welcome to the Big Unlock podcast. It's great to have you here.
Hi, Rohit. Lovely to be here. And thank you so much for the invitation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This podcast is now in season 6, Alicia, and you're looking towards an exciting conversation here. I am Rohit Mahajan. I'm the managing partner and CEO at Bigrio and Demo Consulting, and would love an introduction from your side.
Well, thank you. Yes, I'm Alicia Bella, and I am the AI product lead with Novo Nordisk. I joined Novo Nordisk in November of 2024, and I will say that I am new to pharma and was very intrigued by the opportunities that pharma has for AI. My whole background since graduate school has been in AI in some form or fashion. So we could talk a little bit about that, but that's where I am. Yeah. And I'm from Morristown, New Jersey.
Absolutely. That is awesome that you're new to pharma and you're kind of looking at it from perhaps, you know, multiple different experiences that you already have before that. So please tell us, Alicia, that how did you get started? What drew you to AI and now to pharma? And what are some of the experiences that you have had before you got here?
Yes, happy to do that. I would say that my involvement with AI started rather serendipitously in graduate school. I was a PhD student at Columbia University, and I was looking for an advisor. And I was looking specifically for a tenured advisor because I knew as a student that if you signed up with a tenured advisor, you wouldn't run the risk of them not getting tenure and then having to move to another university to follow your professor. So the professor that I worked with on my thesis was in the area of computer vision and image processing. And then I had a co-thesis advisor that was in natural language processing. And so I had a very early experience in that area that now is so popular with large language models and AI. This was a period of time where that technology was obviously using different techniques, different algorithms, different approaches to it than we do today. But still, there was that sentiment that artificial intelligence could be used to do many things and assist the people in doing and helping them in their discovery mode. So the actual work that I did for my PhD thesis was in the life sciences and healthcare industry, ironically, even though I'm new to pharma now, I feel like I've come full circle. So my thesis was one where I developed a software system that could do image processing on radiographs of human kidneys and the urinary tract system and automatically find calcific densities and kidney stones in those radiographs and then automatically generate the radiology reports. And part of my thesis was to see, well, how well does a machine do that compared to that of a radiologist and comparing that to what a radiologist would produce. And it turns out it did pretty well. And, you know, we're talking mid-90s technology.
Yeah, that's early. That's very early. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what kind of propelled me into the area of AI. And as a result of especially the part of the work that I did on my thesis for natural language processing, that gave me the in at AT&T Bell Labs. And so I got a job working at Bell Labs in the research organization, specifically doing speech and natural language processing research. And what I think most people don't realize is just how long research in this field has been going on, right? Yeah. I think we all think that, you know, large language models and ChatGPT just kind of burst onto the scene. But in fact, the work involved and the thinking that's been going on in this space has been going on for decades. So when I joined Bell Labs in the mid-90s, they had already been doing speech research and signal processing research for nearly half a century. So it was like 40, 50 years that they were already doing work in that area. And I think that's kind of a humbling experience, to be honest, because you realize just how difficult these problems are. So that was the challenge. And I spent a lot of my career, 25 years of it, at Bell Labs, doing many, many things throughout that period. But the part that still resonates for me is that work that I did initially on spoken dialogue systems for customer care. That was a little bit special for me. Yeah.
That is the primary use case.
I know, still today. I know. It's pretty amazing to me. Yeah, to hear that. So that's a little bit about my initial beginnings with AI. And then after a long career at AT&T, I took on a role working at Google. And because of my long career at AT&T, Google at the time, and this was right around COVID in 2020, they were standing up an entire organization devoted to different industry verticals. They were hiring a market lead, a managing director for the telecom, media, and entertainment industry vertical. And so I was recruited for that role and joined Google in August of 2020, right in the middle of all the pandemic. So it was interesting because Google Cloud at that time was really growing very rapidly, and they really wanted to be able to go after some of our, you know, strategic customers in the telecom, yeah, media, and entertainment space. And having spent so much time at AT&T, I could talk the talk. I've walked in the shoes of our customers. And so my role was really to talk to our most strategic senior executives and C-suite executives across all of the Americas in that industry to really try to understand what are their pain points, what are the problems they're trying to solve, and how, at the time, you know, Google and Google Cloud's products and services could benefit and help them solve their problems. And then in my last year with Google, before joining Novo Nordisk, I was the global practice director for AI and machine learning, where I was essentially the bridge between our go-to-market organization and our product and engineering teams that were developing the AI products that are now very much in use, Gemini, Vertex AI, all of those kind of AI products, and ensuring that those products and features associated with those products were really meeting our customers' needs globally and across all industries. So I went from telecom to then representing all industries and went from the Americas to a global role. And I spent about a year there until I got a call from Novo Nordisk. And as I started out saying, I was very intrigued by the opportunity now to take AI and apply it to an industry that I think has tremendous potential to take AI and apply it across all of its business functions. You know, we often hear about AI being used for drug discovery, and all pharmas are very much involved in using AI to help accelerate that drug discovery. But the other one is across commercialization functions as well, which is where my current focus is at Novo Nordisk, is to bring AI to the commercialization space, trying to move from sort of traditional commercialization techniques to how do we use AI to help accelerate the work that needs to get done in commercialization with regards to marketing campaigns, with regards to legal issues, with regards to HR, you name it, the whole organization and the enterprise that's involved in then that go-to-market aspect of taking a drug once it's been discovered and approved to market. Yeah. How can we use AI to accelerate that process and make it better, make it more personalized?
Yes.
How do we find the right patients? I mean, there's so many, Rohit, applications in the commercialization space that I think we're only scratching the surface.
Absolutely. No, very exciting, Alicia. Thank you for sharing that. So as you go about this role, I think we talked earlier on about AI adoption and change management, and how do you get people to kind of embrace it? So what are you seeing in the business enterprise, and what are some of the things that you are able to do to make this happen?
Yes, that's a great question, Rohit. So when I first joined Novo, I spent the first few months, I would say, a good solid maybe 3 months, just going around and talking to various leaders across the various different business functions to understand what they were doing, what their current sentiment was, and understanding of AI. Because I need to understand where was Novo Nordisk Inc. in that journey. It was varied. I think, you know, there were folks that were definitely very excited about the prospect of it. There were others that were afraid of it or still are fearful of it. Partly because I think there's just a lack of understanding and education. And then they're also afraid because of the compliance and regulatory risks involved that they know and they've heard. But we can get to that a little later in the podcast, I'm sure. And so I even also came up with a survey that I sent out at the time to the marketing teams to, again, assess their general understanding of AI to kind of create a baseline for me, right? Yeah. And it was in that process of conversations and the survey results that I arrived at the notion that there was a need to demystify AI for many people and to also develop very strong relationships with our legal and compliance departments to make sure that they were involved very early on in any AI product solutions that we were thinking of bringing to the teams so that everybody felt comfortable and safe that what we were creating wasn't going to create any risk for the company. So I thought of creating an AI, and I launched it actually two weeks ago, an AI ambassador program. Because I wanted to find and take those people that I talked to that were very excited about AI, wanted to learn more, wanted to be part of a community that could then share that knowledge with their peers. And so it's very important to me to have a group of people like that who represent all the different job functions within the enterprise, because they know their day-to-day job activities better than I do. They know where the potential applications of AI could be. Mm-hmm. They could be that flywheel for me within their own organization. And so I just put out a request to the organization, if anybody was interested in being an AI ambassador, to contact me. And the response was overwhelming. Like I surpassed my expectations of how many ambassadors I was hoping to achieve. I have a big cohort now. Now the real work begins, right? Which is how to equip the ambassadors with the knowledge that they need and the education. And my whole purpose really is to kind of awaken their curiosity about AI, inform them in a way that is relevant for their context, right? So I really want to make sure that I give them a broad understanding of AI and what's out there in terms of landscape and what's coming, what's the future, get them excited, to get them thinking about how it can apply to their day-to-day work, and they can then bring that knowledge back to their peers. And I think it's very important, peer-to-peer learning.
Yes.
It's not coming from some directive from the top that says ye must go and do this training, and it's not even in the context of what they need to understand or in the context of their day-to-day work. I think that contextual knowledge is very important, and that's what the ambassadors can bring, is that context. And then I'm helping to bring some of the outside-in perspective of what's going on in the AI landscape today. We have our internal capabilities and tools as well. Yep. We have our Novo Nordisk ChatGPT that our employees can use to query and ask questions, just, you know, but it's all within compliance and legal. And so it's a nice safe place for them to use ChatGPT for internal purposes. We also have a Microsoft Copilot, and there's a lot of training and capabilities there. I want to bring them the broader AI landscape to their thinking. And so I launched that AI ambassador program last week, and we meet monthly to discuss different topics around AI. And I know that the next topic that we're probably going to cover is use cases that are relevant to their organization. And we have a lot of AI use cases going on across the company, including global. So I think sharing, that knowledge sharing, is an important part of this program as well.
That's wonderful. That's a very unique approach, I must say, Alicia, to kind of increase the adoption as well and education, and so many cover so many different aspects. So you just mentioned use cases. So I was just curious to ask you that, what are some of the use cases that you're already seeing coming across or that you might have observed other pharma companies doing?
Yes.
So could you please tell us a few of those?
Sure. Yeah. So again, my focus being on the commercialization side, I'll focus on use cases and commercialization. And so there's a couple of general themes and topic areas that we're currently focused on. One is around what I would call using AI for knowledge search. Certainly, one of the things that I learned very quickly is just how much data is available to our marketing teams and our data and insights teams reports that they get, either they develop themselves or we get from third-party vendors to better understand how our product's doing in the market, what our competitors are doing, all that sort of primary market research that needs to be done. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different disparate data sources and documents that have to get looked at and analyzed, and they're all in different places and it's hard to find things. And so, you know, we're working on using generative AI to provide this conversational interface where our market researchers can ask questions about the data. The solution can go out and sift through all of these documents, thousands and thousands potentially of pages of this, and come back with some good responses, and then the attribution. So the documents that are assigned and associated with that answer so that they can double check it, they can look at the answers. So, you know, market research, competitive intelligence research, sifting through documents in a knowledge search format is one use case. Yeah, the other use case is around market content generation. So how can we use generative AI to generate variations on our ad messaging and come up with new marketing campaign ideas, even use image generation, large language models to generate images and maybe even small snippets of videos now to share with ad agencies to help accelerate the time it takes to iterate. When a marketer has an idea in their head for a marketing campaign and they need to communicate that to the ad agency, using generative AI and these capabilities to help bring that idea to life for the ad agency, and then they could kind of tweak it and put it into the right format to make sure that then it can get approved through our MLR process. But all of that, just kind of creating that muscle memory for folks that they can use these tools to actually help inspire their thinking and then bring it to agencies to finish. Ultimately, you know, the end goal would be we could just do it ourselves, right? I think as well, right? And using these technologies. Yeah. So content generation is another interesting angle. That's for generative AI. And then for more traditional AI, I think all pharmaceutical companies, ours included, do have large data sources that help us understand more about, you know, healthcare providers' prescription habits, what kinds of patients they might be seeing, who are they diagnosing with the diseases that we support with our products. So sort of coming up with those kinds of market insights from that data that can help better, for us to better position are the conversations that we have with the HCPs, the healthcare providers, is important. So using sort of more traditional machine learning and AI analysis is also something that we do. And it's a very powerful use case for us to try and reach more healthcare providers with our medication so that then ultimately they can reach our patients and we can help even more patients with our therapies.
Great, great. Awesome use cases, Alicia. And then early on when we were talking, you know, you had mentioned that you're thinking about a product mindset and, you know, a very disciplined way of approaching the implementations or the use cases itself. So could you talk to us a little bit about that? That what does that mean?
Yeah. So Rohit, when I was first recruited to join Novo, I thought the part that intrigued me, in addition to it being a new industry for me and a great learning opportunity, was this idea of applying the product mindset to developing AI solutions for the pharma commercialization team. Because I've seen it too often in my history of being in technology and development and being around technologists that they get very excited about an idea and an idea for a product and they go off and build it without actually taking into consideration, well, should we be building it? You know, just because you can build it doesn't mean you should build it, right? There's a lot of work that goes on in evaluating and determining whether an idea should actually be productized. And so my role was to bring my experience from, you know, all the way back to my AT&T days and Google days around a product management lifecycle mindset. So think about product management as, you know, design, development, test, monitor, iterate, design, develop, test, monitor, iterate, how to do that and how to put that kind of rigor into decision making as to what AI products and solutions we should be developing. And so that's what I've brought to the exercise of us picking what AI products we should focus on, because there's limited resources. So we have to figure out and prioritize. So step number one is, okay, let's understand the user need. Let's understand and talk to those end users, so those key stakeholders and the sponsors, and understand their problem that they're trying to solve. Figure out if indeed you need AI to solve it, because in some cases you may not. So that's part of that process. If indeed AI is a good tool for it, you know, what's going to be the business value? Can we create a business case for it? What are the implications of building this solution for in terms of compliance and risk assessment and technical feasibility? You know, doing all that, what you would have to do to generate and create a new product. And so bringing that process here so that we can focus on developing the AI products that we know will create the biggest impact and have the most value across, you know, the most set of stakeholders. And so that's kind of what I've been bringing to Novo Nordisk and to our AI product experience, because I think that was maybe something that any company needs. And I think pharma is still very relatively new to AI, especially in commercialization. And so I think a little bit of this governance without it being too heavy-handed can help drive the innovation and drive it in the right way for the right problems.
Absolutely. And in pharma, it's highly regulated, as we all know, Alicia, and there's a lot of compliance. So how do you tackle that aspect of it in the journey? Could you tell us like how you're approaching that as well?
I'm glad you asked that question, because it's one of the things that I mentioned earlier about my listening tour when I was first joined Novo and I was talking to different folks. I made sure that legal and compliance was on that tour, and I wanted to understand Novo Nordisk's guiding principles and how they were thinking about approaching AI. And we have, AI principles and guidelines that we follow today. And I think what I'm currently involved in is working very closely with our data and ethics and compliance teams and legal very early on. So I told them, I said, you're going to be my BFF, right? You're going to be my best friends, because it's important to make sure that what we're developing is done in a compliant manner. But I think what I can bring to that process and that team is an understanding of where to put those guardrails so that we don't stifle innovation. We still need them, but we do it in such a way that we manage risk and we still can innovate. And I think having a good, strong relationship with that team where we both understand what we're each trying to achieve is important. I bring them very early in, even when we're still just thinking about an idea for an AI solution, I bring them in. I said, look, this is what we're thinking, so that you know, are there any big red flags I should be considering, so that we can address those head on right at the beginning before too much effort and resources have been devoted to developing a solution that then they come in at the end and say, oh, you can't do that. Right? So we definitely don't want to do that. So that's an important component, especially in a highly regulated industry. And I think there's a lot of room for innovation, even within those.
With that. Great. So as we come towards the end of the podcast, Alicia, I would like to ask you about what are your thoughts and ideas about future trends, or what do you see in the future from your perspective?
So definitely, I wish I had a crystal ball. We all probably do, right? But if I look at my crystal ball, I think, one area that is interesting for AI, I think, in the future is making sure that we're marrying the AI fundamental technologies with the user experience. And I think part of that is driven by my entire career, I've been kind of always focused on that user-centric view of things, that in order to drive adoption of any product, you have to make it usable. You have to make the experience something that people will want to use, that's intuitive, easy to use. That will drive adoption. It obviously has to solve a problem. So assuming it's solving a problem, it's doing it in a way that makes it easy to interface with. I think part of what made ChatGPT, when it came out in the market, so prolific in terms of the adoption, is how simple that interface is, right? It's just a window that says, you know, ask me a question, how can I help you, right? And you just type it in the way that humans are used to typing and asking questions. So I think as we build now wrappers and layers on top of these fundamental large language models, I think we'll be interesting in the future to ensure that that simplicity of user experience remains. And so that would be a trend that we're going to see going forward, that there'll be a focus. Somebody, one of these big tech giants that are in now in the business of creating large language models, will now have that focus, I think, on the user experience. And maybe I'm just channeling a little bit my experience when the iPhone first came out, right?
Yeah.
That Steve Jobs focus and fascination with the experience, right? It was all about the experience and being very user-centric. I think we can't lose sight of that. So I think that will be a trend for the future. I think it'll also be interesting for how we see these large language models evolving so that they go beyond just maybe text, image, and video, but actually start to bring in more contextual, even more contextual knowledge, right? Like the way that that we do, right? What makes us uniquely human is being able to bring our context and human experiences to bear. That's the missing link right now. So it's interesting to see what the future holds on that front, right? I'm a big Star Trek fan, and I'm especially a fan of the Star Trek Next Generation. And, you know, if you've seen this Rohit in there, there's an important character. I think his name is Data.
Yes.
He's a machine, right? He's an AI. And all he wants to do, and the whole premise of Data was he wants to be human.
Yep.
And all of the attempts he makes at being human, both from a perspective of wanting to be an artist, wanting to be a writer, being a pet owner, right? Everything is all about the machine wanting to be more human. And so I think we still have that desire to see how do we make these machines behave maybe more like humans without taking us out of the loop, obviously. I think there's that fear as well, but that's a topic for a whole other podcast.
Exactly.
But I think there's a lot to be excited about for the future, Rohit, and I feel very fortunate and privileged to be part of this experience and to see where it all unfolds in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Alicia. This was super exciting.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much
really appreciate for having me.